in Colorado in 2014, we were the very first state to legalize marijuana. And there was a lot of emotions around that. And I witnessed it behind the bar and I captured that story.
What is up, my fellow side hustlers? This is your friend and host, Ryan Helms. I want to welcome you to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. I'm part of a small minority that are taking action because we just aren't satisfied with waking up, going to a 9-to-5 job, then coming home only to repeat it again the next day and never make any real progress in life. We're here to create our own path, our own happiness, our own freedom, and we refuse to be just another cog in the machine. Because we have busy lives and limited resources, we can't just throw stuff against the wall and hope that something sticks. We have to play smart and move forward each day with consistent focus and deliberate effort while using only today's best tactics and most efficient tools. We aren't going to sit back and hope for a 3% raise each year. We are building additional income sources that will allow us to create the life we want. We call ourselves Freedom Chasers. And this podcast highlights the journeys of these everyday people who are creating extraordinary side hustles. Welcome to the Hustle to Freedom podcast. If you haven't already, be sure to go pick up your free copy of the Side Hustle Journal over at gritandhustle.co. That's gritandhustle.co. In this episode, I'm talking with Colorado bartender Johnny Welsh about how he went from telling stories to customers about Colorado's move to be the first state to legalize marijuana to writing a book that has sold thousands of copies. Let's not waste any more time and jump into this episode now.
My name is Johnny Welsh. I'm a bartender out here in Frisco, Colorado, which is in between Vail and Breckenridge up on the high mountains. I'm originally from the East Coast, from South Jersey, Atlantic City. I was born and raised there. Raised, I say, because I haven't grown up yet. I went to school in, and this is how I started to write, because I went to school in Syracuse University, and my degree was in Italian language, literature, and culture. Strange degree, I know. It was kind of funny how that happened as well. But because of that, I had an opportunity to go and live in Italy and stay at this little 12th century castle that had vineyards and olive groves. And I was volunteering, working in the vineyards, olive groves. And that place that I was at, it was about 2,000 acres of an estate. And it was just all volunteers, organic farming, sustainable living, learning how to make wine, olive oil, how to, you know, cooking. There was Italian language lessons. That place was what inspired me to start writing. And that was in 1995. I actually helped the foundation there. It's called Spanocchia. It's S-P-A-N-N-O-C-C-H-I-A. Spanocchia, we helped them to create this internship program. So now people can go there. It's full structured now. And they can volunteer and intern and learn how to do, there's a butcher program, organic farming, sustainable living, Italian language, culinary. There's everything. It's amazing. But this place that I was at in Italy, it inspired me to write. And that's when I started writing in 95. And, you know, off and on over the years, I've continued to write, but it started there. And I have notebooks full of, just things that I had written, which will turn into books eventually. But now, as a bartender in Colorado, when I moved out here, it's kind of like you're a storyteller. Sometimes you meet that person that, like, I don't know if it's like the hairstylist, the realtor, the banker, the bartender, the server, so any, they just like to talk and tell stories and really engage with the guests and where they're from and get to know them a little bit and then share some funny stories, you know. And as a storyteller, I see these topics at the bar. Like, for example, in Colorado in 2014, we were the very first state to legalize marijuana. And there was a lot of emotions around that. And I witnessed it behind the bar. And as myself, as a bartender, I have bigger fish to fry by serving alcohol than to worry about weed, honest to God. So I was kind of neutral on it. I mean, I don't condone it. I don't condemn it. But I witnessed the whole story unfold. And I captured that story. And I got a lot of interviews of new companies that popped up because of the industry. And I interviewed people as far as the sheriff all the way to the town's donor. And there are several town's donors, several dozen actually. the runner-up was upset they didn't get the coveted title of town's donor. But I tried to encompass the whole, both sides of the coin and tell the story as it unfolded here in Colorado as being the first state. Some folks call it ground zero of legalization or the epicenter of legalization. And I turned that into a book, and that as my side hustle. That's, the guests, the tourists, and the visitors to Colorado kept asking me, like, what's it really like to live in the first state? Like, what do you see? What's happening? They wanted to hear from a guy like me, like the bartender. They wanted to hear the true story. They don't want to read it in the newspapers or trust the media. They want to hear from, the grassroots, no pun intended. And I would start engaging in these stories, and every single person at the bar would engage in the conversation. They start giggling at first, and then they start chiming in. Like the one guy in the corner of the bar was in a business suit, older guy, he was kind of by himself reading the paper. And we're all talking about stories about edibles, and someone passed out on the couch, and we're laughing and joking. He raised his hand and said, you know what, guys? I bought pot stocks and my portfolio tripled. I'm like, no way, this guy over here. And so everyone kind of chimed in with the whole story. It was a lot of fun. And what inspired me to really to get into this book and write it was traveling. Whenever I traveled either out of state or in any different country, as soon as they hear from Colorado, they smile, they giggle. They start almost like a little nudge, a little nudge. Did you bring me any gummies? Like, no, I didn't bring any gummies. it's an icebreaker. And it was funny. And I remember being on a tourist bus in Mexico one time. And they're asking everyone on the bus where they're from. And you see North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Texas, Minnesota, blah, 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 Jersey, California. They get to us and we see Colorado, and the whole bus turns and looks at us like, oh my God. We're like, no, sorry guys. We didn't bring it with us. But the whole bus turned and looked at us. So it was kind of a funny thing. And that's my background, how I started to write and became a bartender. And I've been doing it for 26 years. I love what I do. I love meeting people. And it's more of a restaurant than a bar right now. So I could actually, chat, talk with people, give them some nice wine, give them a good, salad, steak, whatever. It's a lot of fun, and I love what I do.
That's awesome. So it sounds like so you wrote a book about this whole process, legalization of marijuana in the first state to legalize it being Colorado. It sounded like, or you alluded to maybe, that you saw this coming and you were kind of collecting information on this. You were mentioning that you did the interviews and things like that. So did you have some plan like leading up to this, or did everything happen once it became legal?
It all happened once it became legal, because I was thinking, this needs to be documented. This is an unprecedented time in history where the vote happened, Amendment 64, we passed it. I actually did a lot of research. So the book is full of social changes, cultural changes, and a lot of humorous changes. But I also put some research in there. So it's educational and it's lighthearted, because I'm not really trying to touch a taboo topic and hit any red buttons, because I don't care. I'm a bartender. I have that luxury of not really having to, make a decision on where I stand on it. Yeah, it all happened at once. And I researched it thinking, there's got to be someone writing this book right now about what's happening or documenting this social change. And nobody was doing it. I'm like, you know what? I love to write. I have my degree was in a foreign language, which to me, in my own opinion, in my mind, in my heart, it has a different type of perspective to look at things from, because the languages are different. And to think in a different language, you have to explain things like in a roundabout way to get the full picture. So I kind of use that in my writing style, and it's been working great. I love it.
So once you saw no one was kind of taking this topic on, and you said, you want to put your flag in the ground, your stake in the ground, and you said, all right, this is going to be my topic. I mean, does it sound like you had ever written a book before? So like, where did you start? I mean, yeah, you could write, but writing like on your computer and putting out a book are, I think, two totally different things. So what did that process look like of trying to figure out how to actually get a book out there?
You know what? You're 100% right. It two different things, writing down things in a notebook on the laptop and publishing a book. I had no idea. I just started writing, telling the stories that I saw firsthand behind the bar, because there was anecdotes and they were funny. And then I compared weed to alcohol. And then from there, I'm like, I should go out and get the people that are actually, because they're trailblazers. The folks that started the companies in Colorado were the first, in the nation to have these recreational recreational sale companies selling like the topicals, ointments, sprays, you name it, like patches, gummies, edibles, cookbooks. There's a guy that has a limousine tour that'll take you around to the dispensaries and show you the grow operations, give you an education course dinner, and they actually pair, it's funny, they pair the wine with the steak, and then they pair a strain of cannabis with the whole meal because there's terpenes, which is a flavor profile of cannabis. They pair the whole thing. It was crazy to see. There was no limit to people's creativity. If they wanted to create something, they were free to create it. It was like the entrepreneur system in America, just alive and kicking out here. And that was in 2014. We were the only state, the first one, because Washington voted the same time we did, but they didn't go live with the sales until July of 2014. We went live back in January. So it was just us. So it was good. And then there's people who come into the restaurant, you know, well-to-do, educated, well-spoken, very polite, older folks, and they're like, yeah, they're raising their hands. Like, we're pot tourists. I'm like, cool. You guys hungry? You know, I mean, they were, what should we do? What should we go see? And there were so many things. I mean, a good friend of mine, Jessica Catalano, wrote The Ganja Kitchen Revolution, which is a cookbook. And she has a formula for people who need the medical needs of cannabis. And they can actually measure the milligrams, you know, per serving of what they're cooking. She has it all done with a formula to actually be precise. So you know what you're doing. You're not guessing. You're not going to overdo it. You're not going to get, you know, as they say, couch locked when you get too much and you can't move the couch. So she has a great formula. She's a great gal. Phil Wolf has the Cannabis Wedding Expo, which it's weddings that want to focus on, they don't want to focus on alcohol, because a lot of weddings, I mean, I've blacked out at weddings before. I'm the first to admit that. I think a lot of us have. People that are, there's a cannabis bar and there's a bud tender who will ask you what you want. Do you want an indica? Do you want a sativa? Do you want to be calm? Do you want to be, you know, you want to be a little hyper? And they tell you they'll give you what you want. And they'll roll you the joint right there. So there's an on-site bud tender for the cannabis weddings. And it's, you know, instead of having just booze, people can recreate on something else where they're not going to black out, feel like hell the next day. And then as a bartender, I can tell you, I've seen it, you know, a million times. I'll see it tomorrow.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. You know, you had all these awesome stories and you're starting the process of documenting all this, writing it down, doing the research, doing the interviews, et cetera, et cetera. How long did it take you to get to, you know, coming up with the idea and putting maybe not pen to paper, maybe fingers to keyboard? How long did it take you from initial start to when you had the book done?
That took me over 2 years. And actually, I do both. I do write in notebooks. I hand write a lot of my book, and I also type on the laptop. I like to do both. Depends on where I'm at. You know, it took 2 years to do. Actually, I wrote the entire manuscript in 10 months, and then it took a year and a half to edit. And I have an editing team in Denver. They are phenomenal. The lady, her name is Jody Ryan, my editor. She was the executive editor for Dell Bantam Doubleday, which is a really big publishing company in the publishing world, for 17 years in New York City. She's been retired. She now lives in Denver, near Denver, Centennial. She heard about me writing the book through a mutual friend. She's like, I want to meet this gentleman. And she's like, this is a hot topic. I'm the first person to write a book in a post-legalized state of the social changes in the stories. I'm the first one. And she said that. She's like, you need to be first or the best. And she's like, you're the first right now, and the best we'll see as time progresses. And she did wonders with helping me structure the book. So she's a publishing manager, publishing consultant, editor. She's also an agent. But I did my own company, publishing company. I incorporated my own company, and I did it all myself. And with her help and her guidance, it's been quite the journey. I mean, I wouldn't change any bit of it. I did spend a lot of money, you know, because the editing team is expensive. But I've also learned this in the publishing industry: you don't want to skimp out on the publishing or the editing. Sorry, editing. See, there we go. That should be edited. So you don't want to, you know, be cheap on editing, because it'll show in your first paragraph, is what I've been told, and it's been true. And just last week, I wanted to share this with you, Ryan. It just happened last week. I submitted my book for like a company to review it. It's a national company, one of the biggest ones out there. It's called Reader's Favorites. They only review a certain percent of the books they get, because they get so many. So they read the synopsis and decide, okay, should we further continue, you know, with this book for the review? They liked my synopsis. They read the whole book. And just last week, I was awarded a 5-star reader status. So 5 stars. I have stickers now for all my books. So now that was my dream and my goal, is to make sure, I hope it's written well enough that they enjoy it.
Yeah.
They learn something. You know, I want you to be, you know, educated, smile, and learn something. And with Jody and the team in Denver, they really helped me accomplish that. And I have a whole team to thank for that. It's not just me. And I got the 5-star status and I have a sticker. So
that's awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I mean, that's like, I've been on cloud nine ever since. And my girlfriend, Christy, my fiance, she's been on cloud nine with me. And we've been hopping around town, telling all our friends about it. And they're all high-fiving us, hugging us, congratulating us. So
nice.
It's been a wonderful part of this whole process.
That's very cool. So, you know, when you were kind of illustrating the timeline there, the first thing that came to mind to me when you said, okay, it was 10 months to write the manuscript, and then it was basically a year and a half or so, maybe less, to do the editing. I think, man, that's a long ass time to edit it. Like, it seems like, from a non-author here, that the hard part is writing the damn book.
Yeah.
And so what about the editing process takes so long?
Well, so here's what happens with the editing. And there was a point in time, like, I think one of your questions for me is what the biggest struggle was with the whole process. And the biggest struggle would be some of the editing sometimes, because she would bring me back a whole chapter. You have to rewrite this. No, I like what I wrote, but I trust her judgment. She's really good. So I had to take time out, think, and I had to rewrite a lot of chapters and rearrange the way the story flowed so that the history came first, then the vote, then the interviews with the companies, and then some of the anecdotes. So it flows real well. That's Jody. Jody did all that for me. But having to take the time to redo a whole chapter for like 6 weeks, I'm like, oh man, I cranked that out in like a week, man. I couldn't stop writing. Because I mean, behind the bar when I was bartending, you could not stop the people from talking about it. It was a hot topic. So every night I had something to write, and I was writing behind the bar. Like, I had the yellow legal pad. I was filling that up behind the bar as I'm working, throwing it down, making some drinks, serving some entrees. And then I had little receipts, like the back of receipts and napkins. I would write down all these ideas and topics. I had to go home and organize all that. So it happened so fast. I could not stop the writing process. It was so inspiring. It was fun to do. It was a hot topic. I wanted to be the first. And then having it done in 10 months and then having to redo stuff, that was my struggle. Like, I'm like, no, you know, come on, man. Can we just let it slide? She's like, you could, but you, along with being the first, you want to be among the upper echelon as well. Yeah. I don't want to say best, but she hinted to that. And among the upper echelon, I am honored, happy to be anywhere near that. And she was right. And I took the time to stop and think and rewrite. And at the end of the day, when I was done with it, I mean, there was a point in time where I hated the book.
Like, and that was going to be my question, is like, how did you maintain motivation for not only the 10 months to write it on the first pass, but when you had to go back and start editing, like, how did you say, like, I mean, 2 years is a long time to work on a project before you see it come to life.
Well, so here's, what I do when I'm stuck, and there was a point, like I think I said, I hated the book. This book sucks. No one was going to want to read it. And I hated it for a while. And what I did, I let it go for a few weeks, 3 to 4 weeks. I put it down. I didn't even look at it. And when I picked it up again, I started from a couple of chapters behind where I was. And I would read what's been done so far, and what the team has done in Denver, and what Jody had done. And I'm like, all right, cool. It got me fired up, because I'm like, you know what? It's good. It's capturing a moment in time that needs to be captured. It's a time capsule. The first couple of years will never be repeated, not even by a state that gets legal 10 years from now. It's not going to happen, because they will learn from our mistakes. We had a big edibles issue with the proper packaging not being correct. And there was not individual dosages of like 10 milligrams. They would give you a bar. The whole bar is 100 milligrams. That's a lot. And actually, I have a good friend of mine. He's in his 70s. Awesome guy. He listens to his jukebox on his vinyl records and stuff. And he's just a great, great, great guy. He ate the whole bar. Instead of having 10 milligrams, he ate 100 milligrams. And next thing you know, his music tranked up. He's rolling around in the car. He was fine. He was safe. But
can something happen if you eat too much of it?
Yeah, people can panic. They can get upset. They can get scared. They can get nervous. They can get paranoid. As far as physically in danger, I have not heard of anything just yet about that. I'm sure things have happened, but then again, there's other issues involved with those stories.
Yeah.
You know, there's never been a case of overdosing of cannabis, and people just get nervous and they get upset and then they go to the hospital, and they should, because if they're worried, go there. And there's a funny story in the book about, I have some nurses that are friends in the hospitals in the area, and they said they saw a lot of that coming in. People, they were nervous, they were scared, which they should do. Be safe. It's okay. But they said they had like an inside joke where they said they should have like a lava lamp holding room. They have like lava lamps, velvet posters, Beatles music, like chips and dip and couches. Okay, you ate too much. Come on here. Come on in. We're going to sit you in this room. You're going to ride it out. you'll be okay in a little while. So that was, it was a, you know, a lighthearted joke from those guys. But they care about people first and foremost. So safety first, but obviously about all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was interesting to see all that unfold.
So how did you go about publishing it?
Well, I did a lot of research on that. I checked out with the library, checked out a lot of books on self-publishing, incorporating your own publishing company, the pitfalls to avoid, the tips and tidbits to actually make a big checklist. All you do is make a big list. It's a list of about 40 things you have to do. And you start checking off number one, then you go to number two, and you just, you know, and you read through the list and see what you can get done, you know, sooner than later. Some things are time sensitive, some things are not. But there's a lot of cool lists and cool books out there to help you through that process. And self-publishing now, it's a whole new world out there, a whole new world. Because what they have now is called print on demand, POD. So print on demand means if I upload my manuscript after it's been polished and edited and it's a final product, say for example to Amazon, someone can see my picture of my cover of my book, they can read the synopsis. If they want to buy it, someone out there in Amazon land prints it. Someone else binds it, someone else packages it, someone else ships it, and they do one book at a time. It's print on demand. They have a big warehouse of this machine that does quality books one at a time now. It's amazing. Yeah. I don't have to have inventory if I don't want to, but I keep inventory here because I stock the local stores, bookstores, dispensaries. Actually, there's two clothing stores in town, Rivers Clothing Store and Calisco. They sell a lot of books because they have a table full of Colorado souvenirs. And the cover of my book has the flag of Colorado on it. And they put that there and it sells. And the bookstore, they've been the best. The gals at the bookstore, Karen and Lisa, I go to those gals for a lot of input on the self-publishing thing. I had two versions of the interior book. It was white pages and cream color pages. And I went down there and talked to Lisa and Karen. I said, which you like better? Which is better? And they said that the cream colored pages is softer on the eyes. And then all the other gals and guys that work at the bookstore, they all chimed in. I got their opinion. And a lot of that too, I used like the as a bartender, I used the guests at the bar as a focus group. I would give them questions. I actually printed out, I had three different sizes of the book, small, medium, and large. And I made mock copies of it up. I put the fake cover on some of the other books. And I brought those three books into the bar. And my friends would come in. I'm like, okay, real quick, which one do you pick? You know? And they all grabbed the same one. So I'm thinking, okay, there must be something in their mind that likes that size of a book based on the cover, the title, and how it looks, whatever it is. And I say 90% chose the one size. And that's what I chose as my size for my book. I used my bar guests and patrons. And they're all good friends too. I used them as a focus group, and it was amazing, and it worked.
Would you have picked that same size, do you think?
Yes. Oh yeah. Yeah, I had that in my mind at first, but I didn't say anything. I kind of put them down there, and I kind of try to keep a poker face, so yeah, to speak, and just let it flow. That they'll just grab it, and I go, don't think, just grab. So it was quick.
I think that's pretty smart of you. I think that's something a lot of people overlook, is just not only the size of it, but it sounds like you did it in a couple different aspects, is validating the different pieces of the process of the project. Right? White versus cream color pages, what yes. size, blah, blah, blah. And getting outside opinion, especially when you're working on something as long as you did. Like, I think our opinions get so skewed when we're so deep in something for so long. Like, not seeking outside help is like, it's like tragedy waiting to happen.
Yeah, you're correct on that. And like, it was great to have the input because everyone was so eager to help. Like, okay, cool. I'm here to have dinner and have a drink. Oh, cool. There's something else to do besides watch a game or TV. Cool. What are you doing? What is this crazy thing you experiment you have here behind the bar? And then I even with the cover, there was a glossy finish on the cover and then a matte finish. Everyone chose the matte finish. I asked what I like to myself, and that's how it worked out. So it was cool to have that and exercise that option with the people that are willing at the bar just to participate. I mean, they're the best, and the fans and the readers and the guest bar, they I have to thank them, you know, as well, because they really helped me a lot. They inspired me, first of all. Mm-hmm. They helped validate what I was doing. You know, my acknowledgement page has every single person in there that I ever talked to about my book. They listened to me for even 5 minutes. I'm like, you know what? Thank you for listening, because you entertained my crazy ass idea of writing a weed book. And they did. They loved it. So I thanked as many people as I could. And I especially thanked every English teacher I've ever had in my life growing up. Because I sort of got, I could hear their voice in my head when I'm writing, you know, vary your sentence structure, do this, do that. You know, I heard their voices in my head. I'm like, oh my God, really? But it was cool. And I actually thanked all my English teachers, because I think teachers just, I love that. I love reading and education, and it's just, I think it's amazing.
Yeah. So how'd you launch it? What would you do around the whole launch, right? It's written, it's published, it's edited, it's out there, ready to get out there. What was the process around the launch?
I developed a press release, and I just blasted a lot of newspapers and media outlets and news channels and locally. I mean, people that I know, they know as a bartender, they know me, and they're also the editors of the local newspaper. So they heard about my story. I got in the local newspaper. I had a book review in the newspaper that was amazing. I just, all at once, you should start the launch before you publish, which I didn't do. So I was playing catch up the whole time, but it ended up working out. I mean, I bring a few books behind the bar, and where I work right now, Fifth Avenue Grill, and also Greco's Pastoria, they both allow me to sell copies behind the bar while I'm working. The owners, Johnny and Scooter, those guys are great guys. And well, actually, they're both in the book. So Johnny's restaurant is listed in the book, and so is Scooter's restaurant. So it's advertising for them. I'm over 3,000 copies sold right now. It's in 20 different countries, which is nice. That's really cool. Because I see my Amazon sales come in, and it's the currency is converted from wherever it came from. I'm like, no way. UK, Switzerland, Norway, Sweden, Australia, Ireland. It's amazing to see other countries buying the book because they're curious. Mm-hmm. They want to know what it's like, because I'm sure it's on their minds. It's in the news. Everyone knows, okay, Colorado's legal. I mean, I traveled to Thailand, and I'm telling these guys in Thailand, they're like, you're from Colorado, really? Yeah, they're like, in Thailand and Dominican Republic and Costa Rica, everywhere I went, they all knew about Colorado. I mean, it wasn't just America legalizing. It was that one state because that was in the beginning. So that was a big inspiration as well, that I knew that there was a hot topic that needed to be, documented. And that's my side hustle. I mean, I sell probably 20 books a month behind a bar, it's an extra few hundred bucks, $400 or $500 a month. It's like, it's not a whole lot. And my royalties I get online, it's not a lot, but it's like $20 a month. It's cool. I'll tell you what, for $20, I get to see currency conversions from, like I said, the UK, yeah. Australia. That's like, for me, like that's like everything. That's like just warm in the heart. Like, cool. Yep. I did something that's cool. It's right. Someone's liking it. They're into it. They're enjoying it. They're getting educated too. So it's just, I don't know. It's amazing.
So you probably learned a ton going through that process of writing the first book, editing, launching, blah, blah, blah. Where are you at right now? Like, did you put the pin on the bookshelf and you're not writing anymore, or are you trying to create some more content?
Well, I'm working on my next book, which is it's finished being written. The manuscript is done. It's now in the editing process, which is, like I told you before, my favorite. Not really. I'm kidding. It's actually a lot of fun working with Jody. It's called Paper Maps, No Apps. And it's kind of the modern comedy about ourselves, myself and my girlfriend, and how much we use our smartphones and how aware we should be or should not be. So it's kind of a funny thing because I see it at the bar now. I see a whole bar full of people at the bar and no one's really interacting anymore. They're all coming in and going right to the smartphone. So we took a road trip. It was our vacation. It was 16 days we had off because the ski resorts were closed. Golf wasn't open. It's time to go for a 16-day road trip. And we actually named our trip. It's called Paper Maps, No Apps. And it was a 16-day smartphone cleanse. And for smartphone for us means like social media, Google, all that stuff like that. That's the smartphone of it. I actually did use the camera a little bit on my phone, but that's it, just the camera. But our goal was to be 95% unplugged. And we traveled 5 different states, 2 countries in the car with a surfboard on top of the car because we're going surfing in San Diego. So the surfboard is on top of the car as we're driving all these countries, big longboard. And every single person that we met became a character in the book because they were just amazed at what we were doing. They're like, you're doing what? Your phones are off? How are you getting around? I'm like, paper maps, man, come on. So paper maps and apps is it's a suggestive way to actually cleanse or detox or take a break from social media or just to be aware. My goal actually is to hopefully make people aware of how much they do use it. Just be aware. Don't, I feel bad sometimes. I'm in the line at the bank and like they go up to the bank teller. That bank teller got dressed up nice. They look great today. But the person's going off to them, just on their phone, not even acknowledging that person. I'm like, just take time out. Just put it down for a second. Talk to the person. Do your transaction, which takes 2 to 3 minutes. And then, and then you get back on your phone if you have to. I see a lot of cell phone usage and smartphone usage as a bartender now. I mean, this really ticked me off. That ticked me off and inspired me was a family of 4 came in. Mom, dad, son, and daughter. And the whole entire time they sat at the dinner table having appetizer, dinner, and dessert. All 4 were on their phone. And I don't care what you do with your life. I'm not, I'm not going to preach. I honestly don't, you know, I'm not here to make your life better or worse or stand on the soapbox, but I imagine that parents say things like, where did the time go? Because they tell me that.
Yeah.
Like, no, you had that time. It was right there. You know what? I want to make it, hopefully be aware, you know, it's a great tool. It's definitely useful because on our road trip, we tried to find a hotel to stay at in Page, Arizona, and we had to drive in, drive out, drive in, drive out, drive in, drive out of all these hotels and ask for prices. I'm like, dude, I'm tired. I'm driving 8 hours. I'm like, you know what? Next hotel we're staying at. And it was like the most expensive one. I'm like, I don't care. I'm done. You know when you're done driving? I was done driving. But luckily, it was next to a bowling alley. So we actually went out, met the bartender, parked at the bowling alley. He was like, you guys are doing what? No apps? Paper maps? You guys are crazy. So every person became a character. And we went to Mexico. And there was one night, I remember my fiance now, she was my girlfriend at the time, Christy. Now we're engaged. We're sitting around the fire at a bungalow on the beach in Mexico, and it's raining out, pouring rain. You know, it's not like inviting to go outside and run on the beach, although we actually did for a little bit. So we come back inside, made a fire in a fireplace. What should we do? So I had this book by David Sedaris, amazing author. Actually, I got it from him 2 nights prior in Las Vegas. We saw him speak. And I'm like, you know what, Christy? What if I just like read you from the book? Yeah, let's do it. Do it. So I read her the book. That's it. We were drinking our wine, reading from the book, fire going. It was amazing. And then towards the end, we started getting all fired up. We should film this, film a segment of it. And we did. We actually filmed. We were allowed to use some cameras. We can use footage to films because it's not smart technology. It's really like ancient, whatever. So we actually filmed a couple segments. We filmed a lot of segments on our road trip. And in the ebook, we're going to actually have links to those videos where you can actually, you're reading us, you're on the road trip with us, you'll see where we were in that room and experience the actual conversation. So the ebook is going to be one of a kind. I mean, it's almost like interactive where you can actually read where we are, read that day, we describe the room we're in, the fire that's going, the wine we're drinking, and all of a sudden you can click and see it. And I know it's an oxymoron, it's almost a paradox, but you know what? Sometimes you have to use a little technology to actually inform about the dangers of technology, maybe. There's actually been a lot of discussions about that. And I'm okay with the paradox. I'm fine with it. I wrote the book.
Was there anything that you took away from that experience that you still kind of implement today?
Yes. Yes. Whenever we are talking to each other, we make sure that our phones are down and there's nothing in our hands even. Our hands are empty. The phone is away. And I will look at her eyes and listen to her when she speaks. And she does the same for me. And we work on that. We're not 100%. Times she'll be texting and I'll stop talking until she's done. And she realizes she'll stop. She'll put it down. And she gets that look on her face right now, like I'm almost in trouble, but I'm not. But yeah, we really are conscious about our usage now. And that's a main goal that I wanted to instill from the beginning of the whole book. I did some research as well as to a lot of the things that are happening in today's world. I mean, I just researched digital dementia, which we're losing our ability to remember things because we're relying so much on the smartphone to take over all of our menial memorization tasks. And digital dementia, they say in some cases, it's actually equivalent to someone that has a brain trauma as far as cognitive memory goes.
Wow.
So there's things to look out for and be aware of. And especially when you're at a restaurant, I mean, there's been a study actually. One restaurant was down in sales and they tried to do a study of why they were down in sales. They put cameras up and they noticed that people take 20 to 30 minutes longer to dine today than they did in 1990 because they're taking photos of their food, they're texting, they're not even looking at the menu anymore. I mean, it's comical almost. But that's an issue with a restaurant owner or people waiting to eat. I mean, if there's a line at the door, like we have lines at the door at both restaurants. They're waiting to eat and someone's at the table and they're not even enjoying their meal. They're updating their status, texting, taking photos of their food. I mean, I don't know. If you're out, you should be out. You should be enjoying your company that you're with. I almost want to offer a discount. Like, you know what? If you guys' phones were away the whole time, I'll give you 10% off.
Yep.
I have to ask the owners for permission. That'd be cool, right? Like, just put it down. I'll give you a discount. Just enjoy while you're here together. You know, come on. You're not missing anything. You're not going to die. I promise you.
Yep. So, do you have any other books lined up in the future? Is this something you want to keep doing or is two all you got in you?
No, I'm working on 6 books right now.
Oh, wow. How are you doing that?
Well, there's two that I wrote in 95. They were in notebooks. They were short stories and it was poetry. And I extracted volume 1 and volume 2 from the notebooks, but I'm going to hold off on those from publishing them until people get to know Johnny Welsh as an author and they like my style. That's when I'm going to probably try to release poetry and short stories. You can't just go out with poetry. I'm not Jim Morrison. You know, so you have to kind of establish yourself as a credible writer, I think, in my mind. And if it doesn't happen, I'm still going to release them. But those two are done. Volume 1 and Volume 2, The Owl That Preys Upon Me and Date with Leonardo. Those are the two volumes of poetry and short stories. And then there's another book I'm working on. It's kind of like it's investigating ways to take a break and slow down today's age of acceleration, because things are getting faster and faster and faster. And that's okay. You know, that's good for business. But, you know, we don't have to move at light speed all the time. You know, I think that there is a correlation between the speed, the smartphone, the disconnect, feeling of unimportance when someone else is texting and you're talking. You're not important to that person. You don't mean anything to them when you're talking. They don't even hear you. It's not possible to text and listen. I mean, there might be somebody that can do it. I don't know. I have yet to experience it. And I talk to 1,000 people a month behind the bar. There's a connection between all that. So that book's about slowing down. So I have a name for it, but I'm not going to mention it just yet because that's in the process. And I'm also doing a memoir as well of things that I did. I played a lot of bands growing up. We have like 100-something songs recorded in studio. And maybe one day I'll bring those out. Who knows? But those 10 years of bands, oh my God, it was like a hurricane. Jeez. We all thought we were Jim Morrison and going to be big rock stars. And we lived that lifestyle without the money to support it. It was fun, but that's when I was in Athens, Georgia, trying to play music in a meat locker by the train tracks. So those are the books I'm working on, and I have some other ideas. I'm sure more will come into my head, but I have 5 or 6 that I want to get done in the next 5 or 6 years, and possibly a part two to the Legalized book.
Yeah,
Legalized in Colorado, maybe a part two. Maybe I'll do a like what happened after 5 years, or what happened after even 10 years. Like, what has legalization done to the state? Like right now, I don't know if it's because of the weed or not, but if I ask people in the street, 9 out of 10 will say yes, the weed has increased the population to an unbearable amount in Colorado. It's insane. The past 3 years, there's been about 2.1 million people move to Colorado.
Wow.
Since legalization. So I don't know if it's a coincidence. I don't know. You can't quote me on that. As an author, I have to be careful what I say. As a bartender, I can say whatever I want. So yes, it's because of the weed. I'm not going to lose my bar job for saying that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So where can people find out more about you? The book, you as a person, all that good stuff. Where can they find you? On the
Everything is on my website for my book on the interweb. It's on Weed Galore. Weedgalized.com, WEEDGALIZED, Weedgalized. Weedgalized.com, that has my book, has my bio, it has future books on there. I'm working on a Johnny Welsh author page eventually. But once I have the second book published, then there's 2 books. So I'll put my author page up, and then I have the 3 and the 4 coming out, and 5 I'm working on. So it's just, I love writing. It's a great outlet for me. And like I said, I mean, in case you can't tell, I speak fast. I'm from Jersey. I get excited. I have a lot of enthusiasm. So for me to write, I actually can say all that I want to say because my mouth can't handle what my mind says sometimes.
Yep.
It comes out too quick. So when I write, I can say, I can think, I can slow down. I can tell the whole story without jumping around and getting excited and on tangents. And I joke about my ADD. I said, I have ADHD because mine's in high def.
That's awesome. Yeah. So if you're listening and you want to check out the book or just check out his site in general, the link will be in the show notes for sure. If you're on the blog, just scroll down, you'll see it there. And if you're on YouTube, just again, scroll down. Wherever you're at, there'll be a link around to find Johnny and find out about what he's working on, the books, that type of stuff. So Johnny, I really appreciate you spending this Tuesday evening with me and hanging out and sharing your story and your journey. And I'm sure you'll have plenty more stories to capture and publish in the future.
Awesome. Ryan, it's been an honor. Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Talk soon.
All right, Ryan. Thank you. Bye.
Boom. That's all, folks. I hope you enjoyed that episode. Be sure to go check out Johnny's website. You'll find the links down in the show notes and pick up a copy of his book, Weedgalize. You can find it at his website or on Amazon. Go give it a read and let us know what you think. So, Freedom Chasers, if you like these episodes, be sure to go rate and review the podcast in iTunes or in the Apple Podcast app. It would mean a ton to me. Until next time, keep hustling.